Well, thank you for having me, guys. Actually, just as we were worshipping, I wanted to kind of encourage you, I guess, as a community. I've been sort of coming down here when I can since the summer when we can get lifts and time off college and things. And about probably 2 or 3 years ago at St. Paul's, we started hearing about this church in Oxfordshire that, you know, people as they'd left St. Paul's were going to, and God was really doing stuff. And I didn't put two and two together, and then I came through the doors here in September and just thought, aha, this is the place. And actually, as I've come over the threshold every Sunday evening, I've just felt the presence of the Lord and just his real, real pleasure over this building and all that you're doing here. So I just want to encourage you with that as we begin. And last week I was here and we had a bit of a kind of worship service over there. And I've been saying to the Lord, you know, what do you want me to speak about this evening? And I've been wondering if it might have something to do with wisdom. Probably about 2 years ago, I was doing some teaching about wisdom with a bunch of youth leaders. And then I opened up my Bible. You know when you do that thing, which normally doesn't work, and I'm not totally recommending it, where you're like, Lord, what should I do? But actually, as I opened it up, it opened on Job 28, which was just entitled Wisdom. So I thought, okay, let's just have a little exploration of wisdom and what that looks like in the Bible this evening. So we're going to hop about a little bit, if that's okay. You might want to pick up a Bible. I'll try and kind of go slowly so we can jump about a bit. And when you first think of wisdom, it's not something that's necessarily, I think, that fashionable in our culture always, or even totally in the church. We all kind of know it's a good thing, but we live in this really fast-paced, I just want it now kind of culture. And wisdom may be, definitely when I first conjure up thoughts of wisdom in my mind, it's a bit like this idea of a Yoda-type person living a bit absent from the world, on a rock somewhere, maybe distilling infinite advice to us that is great, but is a little detached from everyday reality. And when God started to speak to me about what wisdom is in the Bible, I was really surprised as I went through that actually wisdom in the Bible is constantly kind of coupled with action, that the biblical thread that runs the whole way through, there's 219 verses and chapters that explore wisdom, and again, it's a really kind of active thing that impacts the world and the society that it's speaking into. And if you begin in the Old Testament, in Proverbs 8, if you want to turn to that, and I'm just going to try and sort this out because it's a bit bangy, isn't it? Here we go, might be better. So the Old Testament, they absolutely loved wisdom. The Jewish culture of the time and the kind of ancient Near Eastern culture, they really venerated wisdom in a way that our culture doesn't. So the Jews kind of had this idea of personifying wisdom, that wisdom was so exciting they were going to kind of depict it as a person. And you open up the Old Testament and there's what you call wisdom literature punctuating the books of history and the books that are kind of more prophetic. And so it's Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and Lamentations and Song of Songs. And they're constantly just little snippets of wisdom saying to Israel, saying to the time, hey, this is how you live for God in this culture. This is how you live for God in this context. And so we get to Proverbs chapter 8. And it says, does not wisdom call out? Does not understanding raise her voice? At the highest point along the way, where the paths meet, she takes her stand. Beside the gate leading into the city, at the entrance, she cries out. And it just continues again and again in this kind of vein, that wisdom is this really exciting thing that's coupled with being right at the heart of the city, right at the heart of the culture, that it's an active thing. And then you move to the New Testament. And if you open up John's Gospel as you flick through, and these are words that, you know, if you've been around church for a little while, you'll probably have heard. And even if you haven't been around church, they're on the radio kind of every Christmas. And John's Gospel just begins with, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. But what John's doing there is that he's opening that gospel and saying, wisdom, wisdom, wisdom. That's one of the kind of connotations that's going on. And I did promise my youth group that when I got to theological college, I would never be the sort of person who said, in the ancient Greek, it means. But actually, in this word, it does mean, in the ancient Greek, logos. Actually, the word that is used for word there is a word called logos. And the idea is that there's wisdom abounding. So actually, when people in the first century, right up to the fifth century, just regular, everyday people, were reading John's Gospel, they'd open it up. And one of the things they'd hear was just something like, in the beginning was wisdom. And wisdom was with God, and wisdom was God. And so John's saying right at the beginning, wisdom is at the heart of God. Wisdom is at the heart of Christ, is at the heart of God made flesh, God come to us. And then you skip through the New Testament. Again and again, there's just references to wisdom. Paul writes to us in Ephesians 1:17. I keep asking that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the glorious Father, may give you the spirit of wisdom and revelation so that you may know him better. Again and again, it's about wisdom and God saying, come and cultivate this with me. And there's a surprising little verse that I love way back in the Old Testament in 1 Chronicles chapter 12. We're going to stop flicking after this, I promise. And it talks about the sons of Issachar, and not all translations pick up on the word wisdom here, but I am promised by someone who is a Hebrew expert, I don't even do the subject, that wisdom should be there. And 1 Chronicles 12, verse 32, just reads, from Issachar came men who were wise, who understood the times and knew what Israel should do. And then in verse 38 it says, all these were fighting men who volunteered to serve in the ranks. Men who were wise and knew the times and knew what Israel was to do. And actually, I think for the church right now, how much do we want to be those sorts of people? Actually, we are people who are wise and know the times, and we know what the church should do. There's an amazing old vicar who floats around Wycliffe sometimes, and he recently said to me that actually the church in this nation needs to make a decision, and we need to decide when we want to stop being a pastor to the nation and when we want to start being a prophet to the nation. That actually our ministry and who we are as Christians is about having a kind of cutting edge, is us turning to the culture around us and saying, hey, through all the love and grace of God, this is the way, walk in it. It's a being wise and knowing the times. If you just think way back, sort of probably 200-300 years ago, to William Wilberforce, and he was an Issachar sort of person, wasn't he? He just turned to the culture around him and he said, okay, you may think it says in the Bible that this slavery stuff's all right, but this slavery stuff is not okay. And he fought and he went against the status quo with all the godly wisdom and courage he could muster through the Holy Spirit, by the word. And he changed our nation for the better, didn't he? And we want to be those sorts of people again who are actively engaged in the culture. So Issachar people. And it's really easy, I think. I found this so often in my Christian life, to retract a little bit from the public sphere and to stay safely in the Christian bubble. And one of the things that I've loved about this church as I've come here is that you're so for the community around you. But when we start being those people who are outside people, who are looking beyond our four walls and saying, actually, we believe in this gospel fearlessly and we're going to go and impact the world, Satan hates it. He hates it. And he'll just come in again and again, kind of trying to shut it down. And the first thing he does is try and encourage us to just retract a little, to stay in our happy Christian bubbles, to maybe go and do the activity, but let's all just stay together. And the Spirit is always whispering to us, say no to the bubble. Say no to the bubble. Actually, you have the confidence of Christ and the freedom of Christ. You've got the power of the Spirit to head out into a hurting and broken world and really change it and really impact it. And so if we're going to be people who know these times, it's not time this evening to go into some major sociological study of the state of the world in 2016, but what's going on in our culture right now? And as I've reflected on this over the years, I think what's going on is we're in this kind of aftershock of a shift from modernity to postmodernity. So up until about the Second World War, Western culture had been kind of fairly static for about 250 years. Things were pretty rational, and I think I wasn't alive, but it sounds like, you know, X plus Y equals Z, and stuff sort of made sense a little bit. And then post-Second World War, a lot of kind of more individualism and wealth and things, and creativity crept in, and there's been some great stuff, but there's this shift to postmodernity, and suddenly we're here at the beginning of the 21st century, and our culture's a little uncertain, isn't it, of who it is and of what it wants. Actually, nothing much has changed in us as humanity. We're still desperately in need of each other, in need of relationships, but we've created this really individualistic culture that's got a deep desire for intimacy and love and acceptance, but often people have no idea where to go for that. What rises up sometimes is a real fear of citing opinion. I'm a pretty kind of confident, fairly opinionated sort of a person, and I find bubbling up in me often, I'm not sure I want to say that because that might be misconstrued, even though I sort of get the gut instinct it might be right. And the worst thing in our culture at the moment is to be called judgmental, isn't it? But sometimes it's really hard to work out, well, how do we stand firm for the truths of the gospel then, but step free of that kind of judgment? So we need to kind of prayerfully think that through. Our culture is desperately searching for truth, but it is terrified of absolute truth. And we need to be confident that we have the absolute truth in grace and love. We've got the absolute truth of Christ. And there's this kind of wanting of it all. Our culture wants us to have religious freedom and personal freedom and everything to be okay. But it doesn't want there to be any cost involved. And it definitely doesn't really want anyone to be challenged. Actually, you go and do your thing over there, but it mustn't really inflict on my thing. And again, we just need to be wise to that as Christians. I think we've got to the point where we live in a pretty scared culture, don't we? It used to drive me bonkers sometimes as a youth pastor. I really do believe in risk assessments and DBS checks and things like that. They are really, really important. And we want to safeguard our children. But it was like it was going nuts. And the kids could feel it too. They'd turn around to me and they'd be like, well, why can't I have your mobile phone number? You know, you're not a Mad Hatter or anything worse. And I'd be like, well, no, we can't do that because of health and safety or safeguarding. And then they couldn't get it. And we can feel it again and again. And it's actually really heightened at the moment. I don't know if you picked up on this whole kind of Ofsted in Sunday school thing that's a little bit scary as bubbling up from the government. And you're looking at me quizzically. Basically, you know, we do need to do something about Islamic extremism. I have loads of Muslim friends, and they're as worried about it as we are. But the government's rationale seems to be that actually what they want to do is go and kind of offset every sort of after-school Islamic activity. So therefore, they said, well, to make it fair, we're going to have to do that to Christian activities too. So they're trying to put offset in Sunday schools and things. I don't think it will quite go through, but the motivations behind it are a really scared culture that knows something's wrong, but doesn't really know how to get to the bottom of it properly. Let's just legislate and legislate. So what do we do as church in 2016 that wants to be outward looking and fully engaged with our world and acting wisely? Well, it starts with ourselves, doesn't it? The first thing is just to not get overwhelmed. I find it so easy to switch on the news or even just to hang out with my mates and think, gosh, the darkness great. But of course, the Father's saying to us, the light shines all the brighter in the darkness. There's nothing to be afraid of. And so maybe just a little kind of checklist or thought for us this evening. How are we doing? Have we got non-Christian friends? And that's something I have to, especially as I spend my life at Wycliffe Hall, surrounded by trainee vicars, I have to ask myself all the time. Are all our mates kind of Christians? Or have we got really good, genuine relationships with friends who aren't Christians? Because that's really important to us. That's going to keep us alive and aware of the culture around us, of the world. And actually, are those people really our friends? Or are they just kind of mini projects until they become Christians? They're going to kind of sense that. So how are we doing on just having Christian mates, on being normal? Charlie Cleverly, who's the vicar at St Aldate's, came to talk to us at Wycliffe a few months ago. And he was just like, please be normal. Don't be awkward Christians. Christians, please be normal. So have we got non-Christian friends and are we normal? We engaged in kind of public issues. We can't do everything. Don't overburden yourself with it. But things like recycling, the refugee crisis, anti-trafficking movements, politics, food bank. You know, what's God put on your heart that you're passionate about? Go and run with it. It's so important out there. how our daily rhythms actually, are we getting in from work or our day or just being at home with the kids or whatever? And are we flopping down in front of the TV and watching a soap? Or are we actually kind of putting the news on and just thinking, hey, what's going on in the world around us? Have we got our eyes really on a global world that's increasingly global? Are we allowing God to cultivate our minds as well as our hearts? I went recently to see this guy called David Pitchers, who some of you might know. He started New Wine way back in 1988, something like that, a long time ago. And he's, gosh, I don't know, probably about 85 now or something. And I'd never really met him properly before. I was going to talk to him about another guy called John Wimber, who passed away a few years ago. And I got into his house, and the thing that struck me about David was, I thought, flip me, you're 86, you have run this race with perseverance and glory. And next to him, sitting in his seat, was this huge pile of books, half of which, you know, titles that I've got and are quite new and things like that. And I just thought, you're still learning. You're just still so awake and alive and really engaged with what's going on. And also, he's great fun and doesn't half go off on a tangent when you try and have a conversation with him. But anyway, sharing what we've kind of learnt. Actually, this is a discipline that suddenly occurred to me in the pub with loads of my mates. Actually, what are our conversations like with each other? Because I realise it's so easy to have the conversations that basically go something like, how was your day? How was your day? And everyone gets a bit moany about their days and whatever. Actually, are we talking about big ideas? When the Lord's really stirred your heart with something, are you bringing that into your social life so that, you know, when I get back to London where lots of my mates are, rather than just kind of retracting and flopping down a bit with them, am I saying, actually, guys, I've been learning this in my modern day Islam paper, or I've heard this bit of theology, and my poor non-Christian friends get bashed with theology all the time. Yeah, just so we're sort of cultivating it, and our conversations are things that are well thought out and wholesome. And are we engaging with things that aren't necessarily comfortable for us, that maybe don't come easy? Recently, I felt God really challenged me to understand Islam a bit better. So I went on a Muslim Christian summer school, which was most enlightening and interesting, and then decided to take the modern day Islam paper as part of my course. And it has not been easy. There were points last term where I hated it. I was like, I don't want to read the Quran anymore. I just want to read the Bible and things. And it was heavy spiritually, if I'm honest. But I'm glad, actually not just myself, it really wasn't myself. I'm glad some of my tutors kicked me into doing that. It was really good for me because it wasn't easy. But there's some stuff out there that we need to know about, even if it doesn't always come that naturally. And so I said this evening that wisdom is a really active thing, and let's begin to believe that. Let's look at the thread through the Bible that constantly depicts wisdom with action, wisdom at the heart of situations. But it's cultivated as well, of course, in the quiet place. As with so much of what the Lord does with us, it's cultivated when we step back with him. So perhaps that's one of the challenges this evening. Actually, how are we doing on the quiet place, the intimate place before the Lord? What are we letting him stir up in our hearts? We're becoming deep people, not just activists. That is an ongoing challenge to me. And are we taking time to reflect? As I've been studying this guy, John Wimber, who started the Vineyard movement, it turns out that when things were at their height, when the Vineyard was just really exploding all over the world, John Wimber used to take 2 days out and just go and sit in an armchair and just think with the Lord. And he'd just sit for 2 days and mull it all over and say, okay, God, what are you doing? What are you doing? Real time to reflect. And finally, are we confident? Are we really, really confident in the truth? I think that's one of the things that God wants to do this evening, is to inspire confidence. Actually, we know the truth of the gospel, that Christ has set us free, that the victory has been won. And the world might seem a little confused and, we don't quite get what's going on out there sometimes. But people have not changed. We are all desiring a relationship with God before all else. We are all desiring a relationship with each other, and we are all desiring an identity and purpose. And that's just right there in Genesis 1 and 2, that we were made for God, we were made for each other, and we were made to engage with the creation and have a purpose. And Satan, for all of time, it was defeated on the cross, but for all of time has been trying to pervert that. And he just wants to disconnect us from God, disconnect us from each other, and disconnect us from our purpose. And the Father is again and again just saying to us, be certain, my children. Be certain. You have security in me. Won that victory on the cross. And actually, any situation that we look at, it's just a disconnect. That is all that's going on. And that we can come with his truth and his wisdom. You, dear children, are from God and have overcome, because the one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world. So take risks and be confident that God will give you wisdom